Good morning and welcome to the LGBT Sunday Roundtable at the Balerico Project. I'm your host, Alex Blaze, and I'm here with three people who worked on three of the campaigns for LGBT equality this past week. First with us today is Amy Hunter, who sits on the boards of the Kalamazoo Gay and Lesbian Resource Center and Michigan Equality. She's a Balerico contributor, and she was the director of operations for the One Kalamazoo campaign, which was the campaign to keep a law prohibiting discrimination against LGBT people. Also here is Sarah Whitman, who is on the board of Mass Equality and a Balerico contributor who volunteered extensively in Maine on question one, which was the ballot question to either keep or reject, which ultimately rejected, same-sex marriage in the state of Maine. And Joe Mirabella, who is an LGBT community blogger, who is the LGBT community blogger at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and was a social networking consultant for Washington Family Standing Together, is with us today to talk about the campaign to approve R-71, which was the referendum to keep civil unions, the everything but marriage civil unions that they had in the state of Washington. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Alex.
So let's go straight to Amy first. I wanted to actually ask you a question about a piece that you wrote on Balerico on Friday, where you said, we had promised to run a different type of campaign here. It would appear that that new model worked. We did no mudslinging, myth-busting, fact-twisting, and no demanding. Conspicuously missing was any strident equal rights now. Do you think that worked? Could you explain a little bit more about how that worked?
Absolutely it worked. Well, what we did was we did some polling, some fairly extensive polling pre-ballot measure, and not even really traditional polling. We did a lot of talking to people in the community about what kind of community do you want Kalamazoo to be? And from that we developed a very simple messaging model. And, there are a few things that you don't do in a campaign. You never regurgitate your opposition's stuff. You never give them free media. So we were very careful about that. But we were also careful to keep our message simple, that this wasn't about equal rights for gay and transgender people. This was about equal rights for everybody, including gay and transgender people. So there was no strident, no strident, shouting equal rights now stuff, no protest-style campaign. It was all very, very positive.
So do you think that sometimes maybe we get a little too used to talking among ourselves about these issues, and that in order to talk with outsiders, we need to tone it down a bit? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, we need to bring it back down to people that aren't in our shoes. And they need to understand that, we need to help them understand that if they weren't already a protected class, they could face the same issues we do. And so what you do is we messaged in a way, it's like, how would you like it if someone could fire you from your job just because they didn't like you?
So on that note, let's go to a clip right now from one of the ads from the One Kalamazoo campaign.
Admitted, Kalamazoo is special, a great place to live, study, work, and raise a family. And black, white, straight, gay, we're working hard to be one Kalamazoo. On November 3rd, a yes vote on Non-Discrimination Ordinance 1856 will help guarantee that all Kalamazoo families are treated fairly and equally by adding basic protections for people who are gay or transgendered and reaffirming equality and fairness for all.
So how does that work with the overall messaging of the campaign, Amy?
How that works is that we're sending by upholding 1856, upholding the commissioner's vote to add gay and transgender as a protected class in housing, employment, and public accommodations, you basically are sending a message to those classes of your citizens that we value you. And when you do that, you allow those people to feel as if their contribution matters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's at least for me, that's the real issue, is that when you're living in a place and you don't feel as if there's any value placed on you being there, why would you want to contribute in a positive way to the community?
So speaking of messaging, I want to go over to Sarah now to talk about question one up in Maine, which you were on the show actually a few weeks ago and said that, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but you said that you believe that the messaging in Maine was much better than what was done in California last year with regard to Proposition 8.
Yeah.
Do you think that there was more that could have been done in terms of messaging, or were people just not movable?
Well, I think it's interesting listening to Amy talk about being very positive, and it would be great to be able to run the kind of positive campaign when you're talking about marriage. But unfortunately, what tends to happen when you're talking about marriage is that people on the other side start to send out such incredible distortions and lies about what will happen to children. You know, the little doe-eyed, blonde-haired girl who sits there because, of course they're going to be teaching gay sex in kindergartens. Well, that's not the case. And what happened in California is there was a period of time where it was just kind of ignored. We're not going to address that. We're not going to go down that road. In fact, the Maine team really did address it right away, quickly. And I can say, having gone door to door in a few places, they're armed as canvassers with a piece from the Attorney General that said this is in fact a complete lie. This will not be taught in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Each school is decided by county, and there's no way that this could get through if you didn't want it to get through. And that actually changed people's minds. People who were like, I don't really care about gay marriage, but I don't want kids being taught it in school. Actually going around and doing a counter message to that made a difference. It obviously didn't make enough of a difference. But right now, what I'm seeing, the messaging is from the other side, is that, hey, it works. We talk about schools and we win. I think that the campaign certainly addressed the school issue quickly, faster than they did in California. And I was very pleased with the way they pursued that. They still remain positive, like Amy was talking about, kind of a positive, we want all kids to be safe and protected. And I wonder now if we need to be more direct, if we need to actually do more negative campaigning in the way that they're doing. Can we win the marriage fight? Not just a basic equality right, not just a general civil right, but can we win the marriage right without actually going down kind of a negative campaigning road? I'm not sure that we can.
So what would that negative campaign road look like? Would we just call the other side hateful, or?
I think that part of it would be to really call them out for the lies and distortions that they have put out there. I mean, they're quick to do it to us, even when it's not even true, but to take the National Organization for Marriage and to really put their books on the table and say, this is a group that's not running by the rules. This is a group that's under investigation in several different states. This is a group that is, funding out-of-state campaigns and bringing in out-of-state people to do, that was a big issue in Maine. It's how many people are actually contributing from in-state? Well, the no side had a tremendous, most of its contributions from
mm-hmm.
in-state, where the other side did not, Then the other part was the Catholic diocese, If you're closing down parishes in Lewiston, Maine, you're closing down parishes in different, and yet you can still afford a $1.5 million gift to this campaign to take away people's rights that have already been decided. That, to actually put this stuff out on the table instead of kind of playing softball and saying, having the Catholic grandmother say, listen, I support my son, and which was a beautiful piece. It was absolutely beautiful. It was great. Philip Spooner, who sat there on YouTube saying, this is what I fought for in Omaha. which was also beautiful. I mean, it brought tears to my eyes. But clearly, you know, when it gets this, the negative campaign messages, when they start saying, listen, this is going to be taught in schools, your kindergartners are going to learn about gay sex, which is utterly and completely a lie. I've lived in Massachusetts. My kids have all gone through elementary school and public schools in Massachusetts. Never once has marriage in any way, shape, or form been talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they continue to pinpoint to our state as a place where this is happening. It's not happening.
So do you think that people...
I would say we need to be more aggressive about that.
Do people actually... Do they actually buy the children amendment? The children argument, because it seems that it was so thoroughly
refuted. They really did. When
refuted.
You went to, there was a few people that I spoke to personally that they were like, well, you know, this is going to be taught in schools, and I don't agree with that. And I'd be like, this is not going to be taught in schools.
Really?
Well, it is being taught in schools in Massachusetts. No, it's really not being taught in schools in Massachusetts. I'm a Massachusetts parent. I don't want my kids to learn about heterosexual marriage. I don't want them to be talking about sex at all in kindergarten, first grade, second grade. That's not the goal. The goal is to talk about their families, sure. But you know what, Alex? They're going to talk about their families whether mm-hmm. or not there is marriage equality. It doesn't really matter. It has no difference. There's no difference at all. You can't tell my kids to go and say that they don't have two moms. This is freedom of speech. That's the Fifth Amendment. Of course they can go in there. First Amendment. Of course they can go in there and say that. They can say anything they want about their family. So the exposure is going to be there, but they're not talking about sex. And that argument resonated with quite a few people in Maine that were completely willing to, you know, they didn't care what gay people did or straight people did or whatever, that marriage is whatever, but they were worried about the schools, and that is what concerns me, because right now, today they came out that New Hampshire, they're thinking about coming up with a referendum in New Hampshire now. You know, other places where we have marriage, they're going to start going after it because they feel like they have the key. They have the winning combination of saying that your kids are going to be taught this in school.
Okay, and...
Well...
Can I break in
with just a comment?
Okay, go for it.
You know, Sarah, I really agree that maybe the marriage issue is a little different, but, you know, they thought they had the key with the, quote, the bathroom issue in Michigan, and what they discovered was that they really didn't anymore.
Well,
and it was because we found a way to keep that from resonating and a positive way to portray trans people. And it was about getting, again, two different issues, but it was about getting trans people's faces out and having a real dialogue with the community.
Oh, I so agree with you, Amy, because I think I felt like, well, if I could only have knocked on every single door in Maine, because the few people that you could actually sit down and have the conversation with, when you really did have that personal contact, that's the winning key for our campaigns, too. We really do need to have that, because when somebody knows somebody who's trans and discussing this issue, or somebody who even in their gender expression is different and addresses those issues, it suddenly becomes real and touchable. That's the key for all of our campaigns, I believe, across the country, whether it be about job discrimination, marriage, hate crimes. And you just need to know who we are. And once they do, it's very hard to discriminate against us.
Well, now that we're talking about fear-mongering, this is a nice segue to move on to, I want to actually let Joe have a chance to get in here edgewise. So the right wing in each of these three campaigns went obviously with fear-mongering, but seemed to have a different argument in each state. I'm going to go and play a clip now from the Washington campaign to reject R-71, which would have been a campaign to reject the domestic partnership law that just passed earlier this year in Washington. Let's play that clip.
In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth and formed man. And he made a woman and brought her unto the man. Thus God established and defined marriage between a man and a woman. What God has joined together, let not man put asunder. Senate Bill 5688 violates God's mandate. On November 3rd, vote to preserve marriage and protect our children.
And then the clip goes to a little scene of a white family playing with leaves in the backyard, which... I find this completely off-the-wall insane, this ad. So, Joe, was this ad... It doesn't seem to really be speaking to the movable middle. So was that Was it incompetence, or was their strategy more get out the vote of their base?
I would hope that they were just trying to get out the vote to their base. They never were able to play their ads on television. They never were able to raise enough money, particularly because they spent a long time scaring their base, saying that if their names were made public, that, you know, the quote unquote homosexual activist community would attack them violently. So we have very strong public disclosure laws here in Washington, which requires donations of $25 or more to be disclosed publicly. So anybody that would have given to their campaign their name and address would be available through the Secretary of State's office. So I think that that worked against our opponents because they were only able to go to radio, and only when Focus on the Family dumped about $100,000 into their campaign, maybe $200,000 overall. And when they did go to advertising, they were trying to make it a mandate about Olympia's having to cut the budget on education and several other issues this year because of the economic issues we're facing. So they really never had a strong message like they did in Maine, where they just kept drilling the education issue mm-hmm. home. They did bring it up a few times in debates, but then you know, Bob Struble, my favorite of my opponents, would go off on some tangent about how gay people are the next Nazi regime. So, you know, they honestly are not the brightest group of people.
Well, yeah, because I was observing from the outside, the reject campaign seemed like a train wreck. And I'm just wondering why they were so mismanaged, because especially when earlier in the campaign season, they had all those issues with signatures and petitions not being properly signed, and then being, what was it? They were signed with a printer by
on the back of the signatures. That we have video of them actually just stamping Larry Stickney's signature on the back of the signatures. And a court, Thurston County judge said, yes, they committed fraud, but we're going to let these signatures go through anyway, because we don't want to impede the will of the people. So we really have no idea at this point how many. It's the most ridiculous argument ever. We actually have no idea how many of those signatures were actually real. There's a lot of evidence that paid signature gatherers potentially forged signatures, and they only got 1,200 signatures more than they needed, which was the lowest qualifying referendum in Washington state history.
Amy, now that we're talking about scaremongering, you mentioned earlier about the transgender bathroom scare that they tried to use in Kalamazoo, that they also used either, I think it was last year or the year before, in Gainesville, Florida. That also didn't work. Mm-hmm. They distributed a flyer that said, do you want your daughter, wife, sister, mother, or grandmother to share a bathroom with a cross-dressing man? I guess implying that they would be sexually violated. Since it didn't work in Kalamazoo or Gainesville, do you think that this is the last that we'll hear of this mem?
No, I don't think it's the last we'll hear of it, because two issues out in the field of feedback that you would get when canvassing were that it was God hates you, and I don't want no damn men in my wife's bathroom. And then at the last minute, they dug up some woman from a health club who suspected for 6 months that she was, you know, using the same facilities at a health club with a man, but why she had been doing this for 6 months and showering, you know, I don't know. It resonates with a certain part of their base, and it makes sure that it gets the base out, but it doesn't work with the you know, the movable middle, which I don't know, really is not a term I like, because I think they already believe in equality and fairness. I don't think there was much moving going on there.
Already been in the women's locker room, because, please, if you've been in the women's locker room, you know that everything's all cordoned off anyways. It's not like there's big, giant group showers and orgies going on. Women's rooms have been classically, for the history of time, we have our own little stalls. We have our own little shower curtains. I mean, it's not like that. It's very different, and it's just it's interesting to me that it's always a bathroom issue, because it's like, come to the ladies' room. See what it's like, because it's not like that.
What else is really interesting is that argument is always drawn from a male perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Absolutely a male perspective, because we're all going to line up at the urinal.
Because
we don't go to urinals. Just crap.
Always drawn from a male perspective.
Because
the
way that it was worded in this brochure or the flyer, it was, do you want your daughter, your wife? And I was like,
right.
Can't you talk directly to female voters, or do they vote? Do they have their husbands vote for them now?
Right. Yeah.
Well, that was
It was clearly targeted to a very to the base, and you know the feeling in Kalamazoo was, you know, we're not out to change hearts and minds. We're out to give people accurate information.
And that's exactly what we did here in Washington too. You know, we knew if we got our message out to our base that, you know, and we were very consistent that we wanted to protect all Washington families to keep the domestic partnership law. We never went down this sort of slippery slope that our opponents were trying to drag us down. In fact, I think that their advertising really helped us, particularly in King County, where Seattle is located, because, you know, we're probably the most secular city in the country. As soon as they brought God into the debate, it really turned away a lot of people. And we're tracking still nearly 70% of the vote in King County.
Well, and the same thing here. There was I don't want to say enormous, but there was a pretty sizable backlash to the negative campaigning that they were doing. And these absolutely unbelievable flyers. You know, there was one flyer sent out with four pretty prominent trans women in Michigan, one of whom you may all know, her name at least, Julie Nemechek. And it's like, do you want these men in your daughter's locker room? You know, and there was just this huge backlash about that, letters to the editor about, you know, this is just ridiculous. You know,
yeah, we had over 1,000 letters to the editor that were written throughout the state in support of the Approve 71 campaign. So people were really, really behind it.
So I want to go on now to the last clip, since we're talking about the fear mongering. Still going back to that subject in Maine, because obviously the fear mongering there, as we talked about earlier, was centered around children being taught marriage in schools. Let's play a clip from one of the opposition's ads.
In the 2005 campaign, they said they weren't pushing for homosexual marriage, but now we know they were.
Literally, we launched this campaign back in 2005.
Now they say they won't push teaching homosexual marriage to children in Maine schools. Yet they are already pushing gay-friendly books in preschools and hiring paid gay advisors in public schools. Last time they deceived us. Now it's our kids who will suffer.
This ad ran, I want to say the last maybe 2 weeks right before the campaign, after this entire thing had been thoroughly debunked by the LGBT side of the ballot question. Why were they still going with it?
Well, because it's effective, and they've learned that. And they learned it in California, and now they've learned it in Maine, and they're going to continue to do it every time marriage issues come up. Because where we originally in Massachusetts sat down and said, listen, marriage is really about families, and it's about families and kids, and look at the Goodridges, here they are, this is, you know, two moms and a beautiful daughter, and this is about family and kids, and it was a message that really resonated with people and made a huge difference in being able to go forward here in Massachusetts. They actually very smartly took that and turned it on its head and said, okay, so kids are what really sticks to people, and that's what really makes a difference, and so we're going to keep saying this, regardless of how true or untrue it is. We know that if we keep saying these same things over and over again, it's going to make a difference. I think we need to be really open and upfront about what we do want to see as an agenda. Yeah, I would like my kids to have one book in the classroom of 150 books to say something about their family. One. Yeah. Yes, I do. and to be forward about that and to address it right on, because otherwise they get a chance to just twist and distort what we're really trying to say and talk about, and it doesn't do anybody any service. I think it ends up with kids being bullied, it adds to the homophobia in classrooms, and it ends up with kids like Carl Walker Hoover, who, you know, and killed himself because he was taunted for so much for being gay when he was just a kid who liked to dance. Who knows if he was gay or straight? He just liked to dance. So I think that that's the messaging that we have to deal with and move forward on.
Well, that was actually so while we're speaking about marriage, I want to go back to Joe. And the homophobes campaign wasn't it called Protect Marriage Washington? Wasn't that the...
Yeah, they were trying to run their campaign about marriage, even though this was about the domestic partnership bill. You know, every debate we were in, they referred to it as heterosexual marriage. And, you know, fortunately, the ballot title was very specific in that it said it was not marriage. So if nobody heard anything else, it said that right on the ballot. But, you know, we didn't engage them in the same-sex marriage debate. We just kept coming back to some very basic protections that were in the law, such as firefighters and their death benefits, teachers being able to share their pensions. We had the Charlene Strong ad. Charlene Strong is a fantastic spokesperson in our community and for not only in Washington, but people should be using her throughout the country, and she'd be more than willing to. Her story is very, very touching about her wife, as she refers to her, drowning during a flood, and her being, and Charlene was denied access to her partner as she died in Harborview Hospital. And it's because of Charlene that we started the three-tiered domestic partnership program. Her story, many people give her story credit for convincing the legislature or legislators to pass the first bill, and then ultimately the following two bills.
So what happens now in Washington? Are LGBT activists planning on pushing for same-sex marriage now that this campaign has been won?
Nobody is talking about marriage right now because, first of all, everybody needs a chance to breathe. We need to see, we need to continue to have this conversation. What we learned is that during that 6 weeks, we weren't really changing people's minds. We were opening their minds. We saw support for the Reject 71 campaign go down, but we didn't really see our numbers go up a whole lot. They remained fairly steady during our 6 weeks. What we did learn was our education for the last several years, our education campaigns were very, very effective. And the most effective strategy for us are personal stories. We really need to continue to encourage people to do the very basics, which is come out to your friends and families and coworkers and neighbors and strangers on the street. Tell your story, talk about why it's important that you have equal protection. I was giving a lecture at a very liberal college right before this to a class about social media and social change. And those students didn't even really realize, how many legal loopholes we have to go through. This domestic partnership law, of course, is not going to transfer with me if I drive to Idaho or anywhere else that doesn't recognize it. And people don't get that. And if we continue to have those conversations, and I think social media was very, very important for this. We had 40,000 fans on our Facebook page with a potential reach of 6 million people because the average fan has 150 friends. And every time that they send out a tweet or a Facebook feed or a photo with them and their partner or a conversation, they're, you know, their old former classmates and friends and teachers, they're all seeing that. And I don't think we should underestimate that power, particularly in rural America, where they don't have urban centers to have a gayborhood or a social center. I think the internet's going to play in very, very viable role in this education campaign. But we have to keep talking to people and having that conversation. And then once we do, then we can, you know, move towards full equality under the law in this state. We certainly have a supportive governor and a supportive legislator, but I'm not convinced the people are ready yet.
What about in Maine, Sarah? Are people regrouping for 2010? Are they thinking 2012? Are they not talking about this? What are you hearing?
I think we're all really upset still. We're very pleased for everybody in Kalamazoo and everybody in Washington State, but it's a hard loss to take. And I have to say, sitting in kind of a regional seat here and seeing that there's already some threats to New Hampshire, it makes me worry about Vermont, it makes me worry about Connecticut. You know, we're also considering working in Rhode Island. And so I think for now the campaign in Maine is not over by any means. I mean, it wasn't something that started a couple months ago and is now done. It's something that's been going on for years with Equality Maine, and Equality of Maine will continue to go forward. When the next ballot question or issue goes to vote again, I'm not certain. One thing I do know for certain is that it's not very difficult to get something on the ballot in Maine. It doesn't take a tremendous amount of signatures. And I know that, much like abortion, this was an issue that people felt incredibly strong about. It really meant something to them. And so just as much as the people, well, I didn't speak to a lot of people that were on the other side, but the people that I spoke to that were on the no side, it really meant something to them to have their state be one of the states that recognize this. So I'm certain we will try again. When, I'm not exactly sure of the timetable. Right now, I think it's more about trying to sit back, learn a little bit more, take some more information in. You know, we're 31-0 on this. So we really have to figure out how to go forward in a different way that, I really do feel like we learned a lot from California. And now maybe California can learn from what happened in Maine.
Well, yeah. Right. Since you brought up the 31-0 number, and there has been a lot of talk about this, I know that you feel strongly about this issue, Sarah, but a lot of people I'm hearing are saying that maybe the entire strategy of going for marriage state by state at this point in history is a waste of time and money. And I want to give you a chance to respond to that, because the No campaign spent $5 million, I think a little over $5 million was the latest estimate that I heard, in Maine. Was that money put to good use? And should the movement maybe go for some more low-hanging fruit like anti-discrimination laws, hate crimes laws in other states before going for marriage, maybe for the next decade? What do you think about that?
Well, I think in the states that we have gone for marriage, we already have the anti-discrimination laws. That was true in Maine, and that was true in Vermont, and it was true in Connecticut, and it's true in Massachusetts. So I think that, and I simply don't know about Iowa. I'm sorry. I should, but I don't.
Oh, they do. They have anti-discrimination,
think,
yeah.
You know, so those states already had those pieces. I think those pieces are an essential first step before you go for marriage. I also think marriage has been by far one of the most successful campaigns for overall rights for LGBT people, because once you broach marriage, civil unions becomes a no-brainer. Okay, we'll do civil unions, but we're going to protect our marriage. So it has pushed the issue forward in a way that no other LGBT issue has to this date, and I feel like it's been very successful in the overall, because it's done more than get marriage. It's actually raised an awareness, it's raised an understanding of what LGBT people are facing overall, so that when the civil rights bill comes up in a different state, this is a discussion that's been going on a national level. Maine wasn't about Maine, it was about the whole country was watching this. And I think that was true about Iowa. It was certainly true about Massachusetts a few years ago, that it raises the issue to a national level of discussion. You know, can I say it's the only way we should go forward? Absolutely not. I think that the march on Washington was important. I think that each step in every state that we do is important. And this is a strategy that has, personally, I believe, probably been one of the most successful as far as awareness. And I think we'll continue forward with it.
I want to thank you all for taking the time to talk with us here today at the roundtable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.